The Justice Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brennan.
Here.
Vice Chair Smith.
Here.
Ranking Member Valdez.
Present.
Representatives Beltran, excused. Bracy Davis.
Here.
Campbell.
He's here.
He's here.
Duggan.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Gottlieb.
Here.
Jacques. Redondo.
Here.
Saroy.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Stark.
Here.
Waldron.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Rosa. With the quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone back to the Justice Appropriations Subcommittee meeting this afternoon. For our members and audience, ensure that your cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or placed on silent mode. Also ask that anyone wishing to speak before the subcommittee today, please fill out an appearance card and get it to us here. Good afternoon, members. I want to start today's meeting by welcoming our newest member to the Florida House. There he is, Florida House of Representatives. Representative Mike Redondo from House District 118, which I assume is a little different than House District 10, probably. So why don't you take a moment to introduce yourself, and you can tell us a little bit about House District 118.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. On behalf of constituents of 118, we're a slice of West Kendall, Miami-Dade County. I'm honored to be here. I'm looking forward to being on the committee throughout the rest of this week and also through session. So thank you so much for the opportunity. And again, it's a pleasure to meet you all and a pleasure to be here.
Once again, welcome to our subcommittee. We're glad to have you, and we look forward to working with you. Congratulations. Members, today we'll hear a presentation on the governor's recommended budget for fiscal year 2024-25. I would like to welcome the staff from the Executive Office of the Governor's Office of Policy and Budget and several of our department heads who will provide us with an overview of the governor's vision for the focus on Florida's future fiscal year 24-25 budget. Presenting today on behalf of the governor's recommended budget for fiscal year 24-25 is Stormy Knight, Policy Coordinator of the Public Safety Unit within the Governor's Office of Policy and Budget. We also have with us Secretary Ricky Dixon of the Florida Department of Corrections, Secretary Eric Hall of the Florida Department of Juvenile Justice, and Commissioner Mark Glass of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. As each presenter concludes their portion of their presentation, I encourage members to ask any questions that you may have on their respective portion at that time. So without any further ado, let's start off with Stormy Knight. Welcome, and you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Happy to be with you all today. As I said, I am here today to present on the governor's focus on Florida's future fiscal year 2024-2025 recommended budget. To begin with, we will look at just a picture of statewide where public safety silo, the agencies within the public safety silo fall. Within this, we see that the public safety units agencies account for 13.5% of the total general revenue funding being recommended and 6.3% of the state's total budget. Another aspect that the focus on Florida's future budget recommendations includes is FTE recommendations. The main goal here was to create, at a minimum, an FTE neutral budget. In order to assist in meeting that statewide goal, some public safety agencies were reduced by more FTE than they requested. Agencies within this silo held a number of long-standing vacancies that have been empty in excess of 365 days or more. For example, positions that were taken from the Florida Department of Corrections were vacant in excess of 700 days, or nearly just short of 2 years. We also chose to fund a number of positions within the governor's office. So we are proposing 283 new FTE for the agencies within our silo. These positions will assist with functions ranging from training fellow colleagues to performing analyses on seized drugs. Next up, just to cover some of the major funding issues for the public safety unit that fall outside of the three agencies of the gentleman behind me. To begin with, we are proposing to fully fund 29 FTE in the Department of Legal Affairs to assist with a growing workload in the Office of the Statewide Prosecutor. These positions will focus on the prosecution of gang, violent crime, and drug activity in Florida. Next, this recommendation also includes $7.1 million to allow the Office of Attorney General to fund year one of their agency-wide Systems Modernization Project. For the state court system, the governor recommends 20 FTE and $5.1 million to address workload needs in the trial courts. Specifically, the funding will address growing needs for court interpreter services to account for increasing expert witness fees and to fund senior judge days. The focus on Florida's future budget recommendation also includes $5.8 million in contracted services for court reporting resources. $1.7 million of this funding is earmarked by Proviso to be used to evaluate and procure innovative technological solutions to augment and expand digital reporting services. Funding is also included here for 10 child support enforcement hearing officers to assist with the growing workload in child support cases. And finally, the governor recommends funding 2 FTE to support the Guardian Ad Litem Program's Pathway to Promise initiative, which promotes mentoring services to youth transitioning out of foster care. So at this time, I've concluded my portion of the presentation, and I'm willing to take any questions that you may have on what I've presented so far.
Any questions? I'm only going to say it. That's it. Whoop, she got me.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead, Representative Valdez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Can you talk a little bit about the Pathway to Promise initiative, and is 2 FTE at $128,896 enough?
So, yes, we can talk about that program a little bit. We fully funded that issue from the Guardian Ad Litem program's perspective. We basically just took the department's word for what the need may be there. Certainly, we can work with the department, or the program, rather, to determine if that workload is going to be a bit more, if they anticipate it's going to be a bit more. But at the time, we just picked it up the way that the agency requested the issue. Yes, ma'am.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Knott.
Thank you. I'm going to hand it over to Secretary Dixon.
Welcome, Secretary Dixon. You're recognized.
Sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. As you know, I've kind of centered our issues each time we speak around three issues: that's staffing, inmate idleness, and infrastructure needs. And you'll see those areas represented in the budget request today. Getting started, first, we have several key groups of employees who work within our prisons with direct inmate contact, who do not receive the benefits of a special risk retirement. We request $14 million to provide a special risk retirement to classification, maintenance, education, and chaplaincy staff. This will positively impact nearly 2,000 FDC employees and increase our recruitment and retention abilities. Second, we're requesting $12 million in security enhancements. This is everything from body scanners, radios, drone detection, stab vest, and more. That equipment necessary to perform our functions. Third, we're requesting $13.3 million to resolve pay issues in classification and maintenance that have inhibited our recruitment and retention efforts. Fourth, we're requesting $97 million to improve our infrastructure. This funding will be used to repair and replace everything from wastewater treatment plants, electrical infrastructure, plumbing, roofs, fuel tanks, locks, doors, windows, and more. Fifth, we request 34 FTE and $3.6 million to add certified trainers across the state. This will help us train and certify recruits. And finally, we're requesting 64 FTE and $5.7 million to add a correctional officer in our education building so the teachers are not left alone when they're teaching in those areas. So that's the highlights from our budget request, and I stand ready for any questions.
Okay, you're it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Dixon, it's good to see you. In lieu of the governor's proposal of recommending the reduction of 422 FTEs, can you talk to me a little bit about what positions those are suggested to being cut, and are those positions that you, are they really conducive to the safety and well-being of both the incarcerated constituents as well as the employees of the department?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for the question. You're recognized.
Yeah, thank you for the question. First of all, the good news about those position cuts is there's no funding tied to it. That's simply FTE. We have 2,800 vacancies now. We had about 6,000 at one time. So it's security positions in that cadre of 2,800 vacancies that we're not filling anyway. I don't anticipate getting down to that, having that need for the next 2 or 3 years. When we do, you're correct, when we do fill those positions, we'll have a need to come back over and try to or request the positions to be reallocated.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Secretary, I'm sure you know that I paid a visit the other day to one of our correctional facilities at Zephyr Hills. And I actually visited while the guys were having their dinner. So Warden and I, and Representative Hart, we actually had a meal with the gentleman. Where in this budget, in these categories, is your procurement for the food service contract with Aramark? In which silo, or is it not?
Mr. Chair?
You recognize.
I'm not sure if it's represented here. It's absolutely in the governor's recommendation to address the inflationary costs related to food, and what that will do is allow them to maintain the adequate meal with the correct caloric intake and everything we meet in those meals. So there's absolutely inflationary costs built into the governor's recs.
Follow up, sir.
Yes, follow up.
Thank you. My point is that it's awful. It's horrible. It's there's no flavor to it. There is no anything to it. So I'm wondering, because we have a pretty expensive have a huge budgetary allocation for food service, and is less than adequate. That day when we visited, the portion was a much better portion that the incarcerated constituents were receiving. Usually it was like a third of what we had. So I'm really concerned about the nutritional value of the food in comparison to how much we are procuring to provide an adequate meal. This meal was less than adequate, and it's not your fault. It's just unfortunate the procurement contract and some of the items that are being served are not even for human consumption. Those zesty patties, they must go away. They're not, they have no nutritional value. And those individuals that are incarcerated fall under our jurisdiction, and they belong to the state of Florida. They belong to each of us as legislators, and it's wrong. Hoping that we can hold this specific contractor accountable for the egregiousness of the level of non-nutritional value that these individuals are getting. So I'm wondering, my question to you is, what measures are you and your department taking to hold these contractors that we pay an exorbitant amount of money to provide a service, and they're not holding their end of the deal?
Is that the question?
Was, what is the department doing in reference to mitigating that?
Mr. Chair, I'll try to be brief as I can. That's we appreciate your question for sure, and it's part of the reason the inflationary cost was necessary to be included in the budget, to stay ahead of that, to give them the ability to meet the requirements. There are some pretty stringent requirements related to the audit process that takes place on the food service accounts. There is a dietitian and a caloric intake that we have to meet now in terms of taste and flavor and things like that. We get complaints from time to time. We monitor our grievance system closely to make sure there's consistency in the grievances we receive across the 145 different units. And as issues arise in a specific location, we address that. But I think it's part of the reason for the inflationary adjustment.
What was that patty called?
Zesty. No Zesty. Joke. It's called Zesty Patty, for real.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, and it's nasty. Let's put it this way. It was fish day. I want you to think about getting some cornmeal. And maybe about that thick of cornmeal and maybe put some fish oil in it, make it taste fishy.
Is that a question for me?
That's
I wouldn't. I've heard of Krabby Patty from SpongeBob, but that's about the only thing.
These are zesty.
You're talking to the wrong person.
I call them crusty patties, but then I have to be good.
And
they are called zesty, though. They're horrible.
Representative Bracey Davis, you're up next.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Secretary, for coming and speaking with us. I'd like for you to dig a little deeper. I'm trying to reconcile the elimination of certain positions, but then at the same time, we're still talking about staffing shortages. It doesn't completely jive in my head, especially, I think, last time I visited a prison a couple of weeks ago, we're still using National Guard. So could you kind of go a little bit in more detail, because I think I'm hearing two conflicting terms, elimination and staffing shortage. So.
Sure, Mr. Chair.
You recognize.
Very, very fair question, and I'll try to simplify it as best I can. Our staffing challenges right now, and the reason the National Guard is in our prisons and our issues, are not related as much to the available FTE or positions as it is our inability to fill the FTE we have. So we've got 2,800 positions. We had 6,000 at one time, so you can imagine the challenges that caused us. So we're in a race to rapidly fill these positions faster than the population is growing, and we're doing quite well thanks to you all, thanks to the governor's past budgets. We've had the two historic pay raises in recent years. We've got a $5,000 additive added at some challenging facilities. So we're rapidly filling those 2,800 positions. Realistically, we don't anticipate filling all 2,800 of them in the next several years based on projections and the rate we're hiring, even though we're doing well. It's not very likely that we fill all 2,800 positions in the next 2 or 3 years. So, again, fortunately, no funding was cut associated with any positions, but just simply forfeiting the FTE for a period of time until they're needed kind of aligns the state's budget mechanism up with the FTE system. So it was a neutral issue for us in terms of staffing. It doesn't cause any challenges.
Follow-up.
Not a follow-up to that question, and I think you know where I'm going with this last question because I go there every time that we speak. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Air conditions. Where does that, is there any money set aside for air conditioned units, and where are we on our air conditioned conversation?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I'm speaking for the agency's position on this, I can tell you, we're not opposed to it as we build new prisons and modernize our system into the future. Not opposed to it at all. It impacts behavior, and there's a lot of benefits to it. I would say this, that if someone determined they were going to give us X amount of dollars for air conditioning in the system, as grateful as we would be, there's so many more priorities over and above air conditioning. Locking systems that are failing, fence systems that are going out, wastewater systems that are falling. So we're very fortunate this year that the governor's budget included about $95, $96 million to start addressing some of those challenges. So I would just say it's among the many priorities of the agency that we have.
Anyone else? All right, thank you. Secretary Dixon.
Thank you.
We'll now move on to the Department of Juvenile Justice, and we'll have Secretary Eric Hall. Recognize, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Smith, Ranking Member Valdez, members of the committee. It's always a pleasure to be here with you. So we're extremely excited about, you know, the governor's focus on Florida's future budget because it helps to really make strategic investments in our top priorities at the agency. First being the Florida Scholars Academy. This helps to make sure that we have the budget in place to go fully operational July 1 of 2024, where we will officially, as some of you may recall, we're going to do this ribbon-cutting ceremony and have our first day under this new unified school system. So this current year, we have $12 million to do all the infrastructure and build-up of getting operations in place, and then on July 1st of 2024, this budget helps us to become fully operational, as mentioned. The next item, $15 million in helping to improve our infrastructure. $10 million of this is non-recurring, with $5 million recurring. And this helps us to address the facility needs at our, you know, nearly 40 residential sites, our 21 juvenile detention centers, as well as our probation offices and our assessment centers around the state. The next item, dealing with FTE, this is really an FTE neutral to the department. There was an adjustment of 11 FTE and reestablishing new 11 FTE that are focused on four positions for our residential services division, where they can go out and provide technical assistance and support to our residential system providers, helping in some cases to do management reviews and things that may be needed to help get staff back on the floor more quickly in the event a staff is taken off the floor for any type of review of a restraint or anything like that. It's just about having those personnel out there readily available to go on site, do reviews, and help get the residential providers and their support in place to have staff on the floor where they're needed to support our youth. Another 3 FTE for our prevention services. You know, you always hear me talk about both ends of our system. We want to make sure that we're supporting our This one being 3 positions for our prevention programs, things like support for our PACE Center for Girls, our SensFins providers, which supports our residential services for respite care, other organizations like Big Brothers Big Sisters. This is, again, 3 FTE to go out there and provide that level of technical assistance. And then the remaining 4 FTE include 2 additional nurses and 2 mental health professionals so that we can go out and provide the technical assistance to our medical personnel and our mental health staff to make sure that we're providing the very best care possible for the young people when in our care and custody. The next item with SensFins, we have a contract currently that's almost 10 years old, and of course that rate has pretty much been the exact same over the course of that 10 years. It's going out for procurement here very soon, so we would like to make sure that we can make that contract whole to keep services at the level that they currently are. And what we've seen is over that 10-year period of time with inflation costs, this $6.27 million helps to make sure that, again, no reduction in services as we go out for bid on this contract. And then the final item here dealing with fixed capital outlay, many of you may recall that we had $5 million, a little more than $5 million this year to do site planning for 3 new detention centers, one being Hillsborough County, one being in Broward, one being in Palm Beach. This item in the governor's budget helps to really us, you know, move forward with the first detention center, which would be in Hillsborough County. And then, of course, we will look at the ongoing site planning for the remaining centers that are in this initial phase of site planning and architectural design. But with that, Mr. Chair, I'll pause for any questions.
Thank you, sir. Members? Vice Chair Smith?
Thank you, Chair. And this is probably a question I could probably get answered by going through the members' budget, because it more relates to a member project. But one of the things I was hoping to see that we worked on last year that we didn't get into this year's budget was the increased pay to the $20 on your contracted out juvenile providers. And are you going to maybe work with a member on a member project to try to get up to that $20 pay? Because I know as we talked about on one of our site visits, just the competition between providers, you were poaching people back and forth in the juvenile system. But if we're going to get up to that $20 parity, is that something you're working on?
Recognize, Chair. Appreciate that question, Vice Chair. And I would say that, you know, if there's any conversation that anyone would like to have as far as members, we'd be happy to sit down and have that conversation and best understand the strategy going forward. But while it's not included in the budget here, again, we're always about doing anything we can to make sure we got the best talent possible on the front lines working with our kids.
Anyone else with a question for Secretary Hall? You got one? Go ahead.
Secretary Hall, thank you, Mr. Chair. What are the acronyms SINs and FINs?
Recognize.
Great question, and I should have done a better job. Sometimes we get caught up in our acronyms. That's the old educator in me. SINs-FINs actually stands for really the section of statute, Chapter 984, and this is all about prevention. SINs is children in need of services. FINS is families in need of services. So we contract with the Florida Network, and they subcontract locally with providers that provide supports for kids that could be runaways, kids that are habitually truant from school, kids that may be ungovernable. Sometimes when there's challenges in the home and there might be a need for respite care, each circuit would have a shelter where a young person could go into that shelter while they're getting support for the youth and family. And it's really about prevention on two sides. One, reducing risk for delinquency involvement, but also reducing risk for dependency involvement where a parent, you know, to get the right type of support, so we want to keep the family unit intact. But good question. Sorry for that.
Thank you. Anyone else? Well, thank you, Secretary Hall.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. We appreciate
you.
We now have from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement their Commissioner, Mark Glass. Welcome, Commissioner, and you are recognized.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Let's see if I do this right. Got it. And thank you, Chair. Appreciate it. And thank you, one and all. It's a pleasure to be here to talk to you about our major issues that we would like to get funded this year. One I would like to talk to you about is a SAFE, which is a statewide assistant for fentanyl eradication at $25 million. Last year, we were given $20 million. That is a wonderful program. If you didn't see one of our press releases we did just recently, we actually did 2 recently, one with Sheriff Galteri, but also one down in Polk County. One in Polk County was 10 kilos of pure fentanyl that was coming from the Sinaloa cartel that we were able to bust, and it moved from Sinaloa Cartel up to California, to Compton, then straight here. So this program is already, we're over $6 million now obligated with over 50, almost close to 50 agencies that have requested. And it's picking up a lot of steam, and we're getting a lot of good results out of that, and we got more coming behind it. So we would like to increase that up to $25 million this year for the SAFE program. Next one would be $22 million in requests for the Florida Law Enforcement Crime Databases. As you know, Florida Department of Law Enforcement touches almost every agency in the criminal justice field, so a lot of the databases run through our area. So the first part of that $22 million would be $11.9 million for the second phase of the biometric identification solution. Now, this is the final year for that. 3.1 for the technology enhancement of the breath test instrument associated software with alcohol testing program. That's for the Intoxilizer 9000. And this is the final year for that. And that's over 260 machines that would be purchased. The next one would be $3 million to increase the criminal justice network bandwidth. Now, talked about the BIS, the biometric identification solution. Through that upgrade, we were able to do over 400 sites, and there's probably approximately 520 plus sites of criminal justice entities that have to have this. So we were able to cover their upgrade during the BIS modernization. So this $3 million would pick up the remaining about 130 sites that we'd be able to do that with. Next was the $1.9 million to enhance the Missing Endangered Persons Information Clearinghouse application. This is year two or three of a three-year project. And then $1.6 million to upgrade to provide additional staff for the career offender application for statewide tracking, with a follow-on of $600,000 for the statewide sexual assault tracking system. And that's to fulfill that contract that we'll have over the next several years. So that concludes that part of the law enforcement crime databases. Now, the next one I'm very proud to say is the purchase of body armor for local law enforcement. And I want to say thank you for that. We were able to use $2 million out of the Firearms Protection Trust Fund. And with that, I will let you guys know this. This is actually really a positive. We are over 80 agencies have utilized this program. We already are, I think we only have 400,000 left of the 2 million. And we are right at 1,300 officers now have a vest today and are working the streets. So that's a really a great program. We'd like to do another round of that through the trust fund with that 2 million. Next is $2.6 million to bolster our investigative vehicles. 1.4 being an emergency communications vehicle, and we also do the statewide law enforcement radio systems that when we have a natural disaster, we have to come in and set up a system. As you can see, some of the hurricanes that have happened and put 911 systems down, we had to put them back up and have that capability for law enforcement to utilize. So that's 1.5 for that, 650 for incident command vehicles. We're responsible for all domestic security for the state of Florida. So, and the other one is $500,000 for aerial lift vehicles. And that is, we do investigative techniques to do the surveillance and stuff that we need to do with those. And final request would be $6 million for a surveillance aircraft. We're in dire need of that to continue on our surveillance capability. It'd be a twin-engine aircraft that we're able to stay aloft a little bit longer. We have a lot of older Cessna aircraft that are single engine, and sometimes that takes they're not able to stay on station too long for that. With a twin engine, we'll be able to utilize that. Also, too, for over the horizon capability for interdiction, should we have something come over the horizon or following things out via maritime capability going out. That concludes, sir, pending your questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Glass. Members, do we have questions for the commissioner?
All right.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate
you got off
it.
Easy.
Thank you.
I want to thank all of our presenters today for joining us and providing updates and information on the governor's budget recommendations for this coming fiscal year. Members, thank you for your cooperation and your attention during today's meeting, along with our continued review of our legislative budget recommendations and now these budget recommendations provided by the governor. I look forward to working together with you and develop a sound budget recommendation for this subcommittee as we move through the process. Unless anyone has anything it should be properly presented, this will conclude our agenda for today. And Representative Fabricio moves, we rise. If he's all right with that.
Yes,